Good evening, fellow denizens. Welcome to the Den of Lore's Halloween special. Because, you know, it wouldn't be a paranormal show without a Halloween special. It's apparently supposed to be like a prerequisite. And, you know, what is a Halloween special without some ghost stories? Courtesy of none other than good friend of the show, the founder and head researcher of Ottawa Paranormal Research and Investigation, considered one of the top ghost hunters in all of Eastern Canada, is joining us on the Den of Lore. And he's been very, very, very kind in terms of... Are you kidding me? We have Gremlins in the Machine. The show is haunted tonight, ladies and gents. And as you can see, the lights are down. And right now, in front of me, I only have myself and one other individual. Is that man right there? John Moore, how are you doing tonight?
Not doing too bad, Chris. All good here. How about you?
You know, I've had better days. It's like the equipment was absolutely haunted and just did not want to work. I think we lost our YouTube stream, and I'm not even sure if our Twitch stream is working at the moment, because if I check, it'll probably crash most of what I have left of this computer. You've been witness to the technical difficulties that I've had today, from iTunes crashing to constant issues with our team viewer communication with the workstation over there. And I'm just going to turn off team viewer just to be able to save some bandwidth here. But you know what? For the ladies and gentlemen at home, if you actually go back to... I'm trying to remember, was it episode like 6 or 5? It was one of our first episodes ever.
It was a long time back, yeah.
And you came on the show, and I think we did about a 2.5 hour. No, it was about a 2 hour show, and we talked about your profession, which is ghost hunting. And well, that's kind of a layman's term to be able to say paranormal investigation. He is the real deal. We were talking before the show that he does not like to fake any type of footage, which I know can be somewhat of an issue considering television nowadays, as we all know, ladies and gentlemen. So we have a man of integrity and of science, and I'm just going to read your bio for all the ladies and gentlemen at home. John Moore is the founder and lead investigator for OPRI. He has been researching and investigating the paranormal for over 15 years. John spent time working with different teams in the past in order to further study and understand paranormal phenomena. But after several years of gathering evidence, he decided it was time to start his own team. John built the team based on the concept of paranormal unity, coming together as a community to share knowledge in order to help people in desperate need. He first became fascinated with the paranormal as a young boy growing up in New Brunswick. He saw his first apparition at age 9 while inside the funeral home that his family had run for multiple generations. From that moment forward, he has been searching for answers to the many unanswered questions that surround this topic. His ultimate goal is to use what he has learned in order to help people and share his knowledge with future generations of paranormal investigators. John, welcome back to the show. If you want to check out, or if you're, I'm gonna do the pitch right now. If you have some trouble with some ghosts, you now know who to call. This guy, and it is a service that OPRI actually provides free of charge, if I'm not mistaken.
That's correct.
Now, I have to say that is very altruistic. You don't see that nowadays. And why did you decide to go, you know, the pro bono course with regards to paranormal investigations?
Well, believe it or not, in what we do, most people will do it that way. Very few teams will actually charge you. And if they do charge, your best bet is to actually get away from them. Because oftentimes, I mean, what can you charge for in this field? A lot of what we do is theoretical. And a lot of the time, we're there to find natural answers, not to tell somebody their house is haunted. So we really can't charge for it. I mean, anyone who is, they're just looking to take advantage of people that really, you know, they have nowhere else to turn. So.
And that's been kind of a recurring theme on the show for the last 2 months or so. I understand where you're coming from. And as I mentioned, it's commendable. I didn't even know that it was, for the most part, a service organization, or at least organizations like yours were service organizations as a whole. What exactly do you investigate as far as going into homes or into different buildings? Like, what are you looking for?
Well, it depends on the case, honestly. Like, normally when somebody contacts us, we take the claims of activity that they're experiencing, and from there, we'll try to assess what possible natural explanations there could be for these. Excuse me. Or, you know, what are some alternative explanations that could be occurring, that could, you know, give these people some answers to what they're experiencing.
And, you know, this is more of a Halloween-themed show, and I'd be remiss if I didn't mention exorcisms. You actually have a priest on your team whose specialty is exorcism. Is that correct?
He's a bishop, but yes, that is correct.
Oh, bishop. Okay, well, I'm going to be in trouble on that one. Have you witnessed him do apply his exorcism trade? Like, have you been there for an exorcism?
Yes, I have.
Holy
crap. I have been present at one major and two minor to date.
Can you recount the situation? Because that seems extraordinary. I know a lot of people may attribute demonic possession to, mental disorder, but there are usually a lot of phenomena that accompany a possession of some type of being or entity, for instance. And a lot of it cannot necessarily be explained outright by, straight up science.
That's absolutely correct. I mean, 90% of the time when things like that come about, we do find natural or medical reasons to be talking to these people. And a lot of the time we're actually able to convince them to go get the medical checks and to tell their doctors these things, because most of them are just afraid that if they tell their doctor this, they're going to sound crazy and he's going to lock them up, in a loony bin. But 90% of the time when people are hearing voices, things like that, the doctors aren't going to be locking you up. They're going to do neurological tests. They're going to do things like that, and they're going to find things. Now, we had one woman who swore she was possessed for the longest time. She ended up finally going to the doctor, and the doctor found she had a brain aneurysm that likely would have killed her if she hadn't gone there.
Whoa.
So, these are things that are realistic that people need to look for. Now, we do have Bishop Plato on team with us, because we have had some where even the doctors would look at them and say, okay, there's nothing going on. And at that point, we have to hand it over to him and let him kind of do his thing.
And beyond demonic possessions, does he have any other specialties? Like, can he summon or drive out space aliens? Is there some type of extra skill or secondary proficiency? I'm assuming he's more of a paladin character, probably level 20 at this point.
I'd give him a little better than 20 at this point. No, basically his specialty is that, like, we have a lot of people that we work with in different fields, different backgrounds. Each one of them has their own specialty. We have a gentleman, his name is Leslie J. Hart. He's actually a shamanic practitioner. He's being trained by the Blackfoot in Montana.
Oh.
But he's actually from Rhode Island, and he has driven up to Ottawa numerous times just because I've called him. He loves to travel, and wouldn't we all love to do with that? But no, when we need a shamanic practitioner for a Native American case, something like that, we call him and he's there. My occult specialist, who I had hoped to actually bring on the show tonight with me, she's actually a practicing witch with a master's in religion. I figured being Halloween night, that'd be great. But as you know, for occultists and things, there's a lot of stuff going on tonight. So she was kind of occupied. I don't know what, and I don't really care. So
it's like, can you come on the show? The force is out tonight. Unfortunately, I'm occupied.
we're probably lucky because one of us could be a frog by the end of it, you know.
You know, it's the age old, you know, saying don't. What's they say? Life's a witch.
Don't mess with a witch.
Pretty much.
I'm good with that.
It, yeah. I've watched Hocus Pocus. I understand it's a very bad way. Again, I'm making light of the situation because that's what we do on the show. I do know people who do practice occult, shamanistic. Let's see, druidic practices. You name it. It's you know, there are things in this world that we can't necessarily explain, and you know, a lot of it's just about good karma, or trying to do as good karma as humanly possible and ticking off. So I am very interested to hear some of the stories that you have, because you've been doing a lot of traveling the last couple of months. I've been following you on Facebook. You've been out to New Brunswick. You've been out to south of Ottawa to some of the most haunted buildings that we actually have in the city to investigate, or to, you know, excise the spirits that have been there. And being Halloween, regale us with the ghost stories.
Well, I think the best one I can do is, as you mentioned, we did do a trip to New Brunswick this year, my wife and I. And while we were there, I had the opportunity to investigate, personally, what I find to be one of the most haunted places in Canada. The St. Andrew's Historic Jail, or some those who out there might know it as the Charlotte County Archives. Now, basically, this is one of Canada's oldest running jails. It ran from the early 1800s. I don't remember the exact dates, but it ran up until the 1970s. And to walk into this, the doors into the rooms were, like, I'm not a big guy, but I have to turn sideways to go in. They were maybe a foot and a half wide. These are the rooms that these people were put into, and even as close as the 1970s. And the claims of activity out of this place are just absolutely insane. Like, the building itself, when you go there, is nothing spectacular. I mean, it's a smaller building like you would expect from the 1800s. There's 8 cells in the jail area and a living area, and what was a living area upstairs where the jailer and his family would have been. Now, one of the claims of activity in the location comes from a story, which they do have proof of a jailer's wife from somewhere in the mid-1800s, where the woman was upstairs sitting, knitting or reading, doing something by the fire, and with her big Victorian dress on. And one of the sparks came off of that dress and actually caught her dress on fire. Now, she came running downstairs looking for help, but obviously the only people downstairs were the inmates who were locked in their cells. Oh. So she ended up dying in front of the jail, in the hallway, right in the jail, burned to death in front of all these men that could do nothing but listen to her scream. Now, since that day, people have seen her her apparition on the stairs and in the upper areas. So that was one of the things we were looking for. Unfortunately, she didn't come up to play with us, but, you know, we were hoping we would find her. Another story there is a bit of a lengthy one, but it involves a gentleman named Thomas Ward. And there was a murder involved, and he was blamed for the murder. However, as I recall, I have a lot of details from these, and it's hard to keep them all track. But with the Thomas Ward case, he was accused of murder, but his wife and her lover were the ones who actually committed the murder.
Oh.
Yeah, and now all three of them were actually locked in jail together in different cells. And but apparently he was actually hung, as I recall, he was hung for the murder, or he was killed by the townspeople. I can't recall which it was. And basically his ghost still haunts the jail today, as well as another gentleman. He was a British soldier. His name is Thomas as well. He's the focal point of most of the Haunted Walk of St. Andrew's walks when they're in the jail. And he has been seen multiple times in his end cell. He was hung behind the jail at a gallows and then buried in an unmarked grave in a nearby cemetery. So,
now, what causes ghosts to haunt an area or a building? And can they move outside of the bounds, and how are the bounds even defined?
Generally, what we've found is that spirits that haunt a building, like in the case of the jail, the people that haunt that building, it's just that was the place they spent a lot of time. A lot of things happened, and they went through a lot of trauma there. You know, he was wrong. This the one Thomas, he was wrongly accused. Actually, both of them were wrongly accused and hung or killed in that vicinity, in that building. And, you know, it's an injustice that was done to them. And they feel that trauma. And they basically have lingered on since then. Now, can they leave the area? That's one that's still up in the air. But to my knowledge, generally those type of things, they would stay where that energy is present just because they are trapped there.
And in terms of the difference between demonic possession and ghosts, for instance, most people look at it as one and the same, but they're vastly different in a lot of ways. And it's like dealing with coke and water, the way that I put it.
Yeah, I would look at it more like basically like a regular house cat versus a tiger.
Whoa. Okay. Generally speaking, with demonic possession, is there telltale signs, in terms of a building or location being possessed? And I'm going to say the major differences, because if you're comparing house cat to tiger, I'm assuming that the severity would be a lot higher. It's like putting in your headphones and cranking the volume up to 11. But generally,
that would be absolutely correct. Like when a situation is actually demonic, the severity will be a lot worse. However, the demonic are tricksters, and they love to actually play themselves down. So the severity you won't see until much later when it's too late. Like one of the greatest tricks they have is they will actually mimic something that's non-threatening until they get that foothold. Once they have that foothold, that's when things really go, well, pardon the pun, but to hell.
And how does demonic possession come about?
There are so many different ways it can come about. There's a list that's so long, it's so difficult to actually get into every single one of them. And to be honest, I don't like saying some of those because, we've all heard when you see things online, does three scratches or three knocks mean that it's a demon, things like that. Those things don't necessarily mean that it's a demon. They're just a sign that people who know what to look for are watching for. But there's a lot more than that. And any one of those signs is not something to say, yes, this is a demon. Because there are a lot of human spirits that in life were jerks or they just wanted to scare people. And they still do that in death. And they will mimic these things.
Now, Lee Veltman, our show intern, is asking about your thoughts on succubus versus incubus.
One's male, one's female.
Okay, well, there you go, Lee.
not sure what he's meaning to get at with it, but succubus and incubus are technically the same type of demonic familiar. However, one is a male, one is a female.
Okay, and have you run into any points? Are these things fairly common?
We've heard claims of activity from people regarding this, but a lot of those we were able to they were able to get some help. Some of those ended up going to psychological because it was things that were happening in their dreams, almost like night terrors. Mm-hmm. And they were able to get help that way. Sometimes, we have had the bishop come in. We weren't able to catch any evidence of these things because, that's one of those things. You don't really want to have cameras on people when they're sleeping. So we don't do that. We don't get involved with those type of things. But the bishop would come in that situation, actually say some prayers, work with the people. And we would have the people speak to some counselors and things just in case to get that help they need with those.
And for anybody else, it was just identified as their crazy ex. Am I getting?
No, those are generally a lot meaner.
Yeah, that can be. So I'm not even sure what you know, what incantation or charm you'd be able to use to help ward that off. But, you know, it's usually it, you know, as I say, it's distance, lots of distance.
But there is one good ritual you can use for that. However, it involves going down to Elgin Street to the courthouse there, and there's a guy in the back with a big robe that gives you a paper that is a great incantation.
Yeah,
usually it keeps them all within 50 to 100 yards. So
I believe in times past it was called restraining orderus. That's pretty much restraining orderus. Yes,
yeah. Restrainus orderus. Whichever Latin translation works.
The distance is 30 meters. 31 is too far. 40 is right out. 29.
Yeah.
What's the general process that you use when going into a location to discover whether it's haunted, demonic possession, and to try and investigate the phenomena themselves, whether we're talking, let's say, for instance, equipment, your processes, how do you do your job?
Well, generally, the first thing we do is when somebody contacts us, we'll have our case manager, Julia, will contact them. And we have a questionnaire that we go through with them. And that'll give us a bit more background as to what's going on, a bit more better idea on what's happening. And from there, we'll try, if we're able to, because some of the times we have cases that are like 2 hours away and such. And for those, I can't do a pre-visit. But generally, we'll try to pre-visit the house, get a look at it, see if there's anything we can debunk ourselves quickly and easily. Because, you know, there are a lot of natural factors that can be picked out and found rather simply. So we try to find those first just to, you know, save some time.
Mm-hmm.
From there, our team will actually come in with the gear. We'll set it up. Depending on the case, obviously. And we'll try to document and verify the claims that these people have been experiencing. If we can't document and verify them, what we'll try to do is find alternate explanations for what can be causing this. So that's basically where we go from there. And then after the fact, we would go back, review our evidence, see what we have, what we captured, what we didn't. And from there, we would reevaluate what our course of action would be. Sometimes it means we have to return for another investigation. And sometimes we're able to figure out what's happening during our investigation. So we're able to give the homeowners a bit of an explanation and some courses of action that they can take to try and fix the problem that's happening.
Has it ever happened that it's been such a bad, either possession or haunting, that the recommendation came back to move the fuck out of here?
No.
Really?
We have not encountered that.
I'm going to say, what's your success rate?
I mean, I have had a lot of cases where people, that's the one thing when we do what we do, we have had a lot of cases where people don't like what we tell them. I've had some people that have actually told me, you know, I'd like you guys to leave just because they didn't like what we were telling them.
Can you give us an idea of what that was without divulging any confidential information?
We were at one location where we have medical personnel on our staff,
mm-hmm.
A couple of trained nurses, things like that. And in one location we were at, the people were claiming all these weird mood swings. They were saying the children were getting out of control, things like this, which are common. Well, you can find literature on the internet that will tell you this is common for a demonic possession. Now, the medication was given, and our investigators upstairs, she asked them, have you taken them for a medical examination? She said yes. They prescribed some pills, and we asked, you know, would you mind if we just had a look to see what these pills are?
Mm-hmm.
And she said, you know, I'm a practicing nurse. I don't want to intrude or anything, but can I just see them? They showed it to her, and she saw the dosage, and she saw this, and she asked them, are you doing this? And they said, no, we've been only doing half of that when they need it. So they weren't following the regimen for the doctor. And these pills, as I was informed, are for a child who would be mildly autistic with violent tendencies, which would explain exactly what was happening here. So by not following those medications, which is what we told them, they could be, this is, could be the cause, so they should really be following this. They did not like that answer because they would prefer that it was something paranormal, and we were asked to leave.
Oh. Well, that would seem like a very rational explanation. And like that's kind of one of the things when it comes to paranormal, this, I'm not going to say all the time, a lot of the time there can be very rational explanations for what's being seen. In a case where everyone thought it was the standard explanation or the rational explanation, when is it proven to be the opposite?
Well, for us, one of the things we look for is when we can find something that has been seen by multiple people that can't be explained. Like during one of our cases years ago, we were at a house. It's had activity since the 1970s. It was one of the minor possession cases that we had been to. Minor rite of exorcism cases. There was no possession. But the land we were able to trace back was used to be a dump. And in this dump, there was a group of Satanists that used to actually perform their rituals and things on or about the area. And we believe it might have been in the area where this house was, based on the amount of activity occurring in the house.
Ah.
So by following this lead, we actually had the bishop with us, and he performed a house exorcism, which is the minor rite. And that actually ended up, since then, they haven't had any activity. Now, that was the 70s the house was built. We were there in the, I think it was 2013 we actually visited that house. And they have been activity-free since we were there. But no family had lasted more than 6 months in that house prior. And the biggest thing with that one was there was multiple incidents where over 7-8 people would be in the house and they would see rocking chairs start to go on their own. Which we had visited the house and we had seen it's a sturdy place. It's from the 70s, so it's not like it's the foundation. The Brockville area is, you know, part of the Canadian Shield. They do have earthquakes, but checking seismic records, we weren't able to find any on those days. And the chair itself, we tried getting it to move with wind, with all kinds of things. It wouldn't move, so we couldn't find any explanation for this. But yet, multiple people had seen this this move.
When was a time that you yourself felt the most scared during an investigation or at any point fulfilling your role?
You see, after doing it this long, I'm actually not really scared when I'm on these. I get more excited when something like that happens. The only time I've actually felt a little bit of nervousness or anything is when one of our investigators, she was a couple months pregnant. And during the investigation, she goes, oh, my stomach is really feeling bad. So for at that point, I wasn't necessarily scared of the investigation. I was more scared, like, I've got this 2-month pregnant woman in a haunted house in the middle of the night, and she's having stomach problems. So that kind of freaked us out a little bit. But
it's like, did anybody else see Ghostbusters 2? You know, you got to be careful.
Yeah. No, it turns out she was all right. So,
well, that's...
It was just gas, so the rest of us had to suffer.
I know you have to go. This was going to be a short episode because it is so late at night. But in terms of the equipment that you use and the importance of ensuring that you have the right equipment, what's the difference between what you use to, let's say, what, you know, an amateur ghost hunter or what somebody who captures a figure on a Polaroid camera? Is the basic theory the same, or is your equipment specialized and tuned to be able to, I'm going to say, pick up the phenomena considerably more clear if it's there?
Basic theory is the same. That's the thing. Everything we use in this, there are no ghost detectors. Like, you watch these paranormal TV shows, they have all these gadgets that light up with EMF and all this. The reality is, EMF is not a proven ghost detection method. It's just one that we use because it's it's something we can monitor in the environment, which actually gives us something we can work from. Now, there is no scientific basis stating, yes, this is a ghost when it goes off. I mean, up until the 1980s, people were using Geiger counters for it. But, you know, radiation's in a building. That could be a reason why you're starting to see things on its own. So the thing is, with us versus somebody who just takes a picture with their Polaroid and sees something, is the fact that we've got years of experience doing this. We have people that we work with that are professionals in the fields of photography, audio, engineers, things like that, that we can actually ask these questions to and send them some of our evidence, data, whatever you want to call it. They can look at it and see, you know, is this something that could be caused by a camera malfunction? Is there another explanation for it? Is this something other than just, oh my gosh, there's a whole bunch of orbs in my picture. It must be a ghost.
Well, everyone knows that those would be, you know, extraterrestrial space pixies, not ghosts. So, again,
I usually accredit them to snow or rain, especially in the winter.
Oh, man, you're ruining the mystique. Come on, this is the one episode of the year where we could, like, you know, say, hey, we're actually going to do a pro wrestling show. Okay. Is there any final words you'd like to be able to say to the audience?
For everyone out there, if you do believe you are experiencing something, by all means, visit the website ottawaparanormal.com. We are more than happy to talk to anyone who believes they are experiencing paranormal activity. We are happy to help them. And of course, watch for the episodes from St. Andrews and a few others that we're putting together on our web series, Into the Haunting. It is coming. It is a little behind schedule based because of some personal things, but that will be out sometime shortly, I hope.
And if people want to be able to get a hold of you, how can they best do that?
The best way is through the Ottawa Paranormal website, ottawaparanormal.com, or they can reach out to us on Facebook, Twitter. We're on all of them.
Fantastic. And you know what? Yes, they are. And yeah, pretty much you search Ottawa Paranormal. You can't miss it. If you just put Ottawa Par, you'll get Ottawa Paramedics. It's kind of like what they do, but, you know, on actual people, not ghosts. So you got to fill out the rest of the word. Ladies and gentlemen, this has been, well, Chris George Zuger and John Moore of OPRI. And I'm going to play. Let's see if we back this up here because I love this music. There we go. 1 second here. Let me just got to do something quickly.
If you're playing the Ghostbusters theme, please make sure it's the original.
No, if I did that, I would get sued. Or at least this would get flagged and probably taken down, and we don't want to do that. Oop. Oh, come on. Trying to make sure I got the next segment episode going, because apparently I didn't do that. Now, while we're going through this and while I'm getting this done, what is one upcoming investigation that you're going to be doing that you're really excited about?
We've got a few in the works. One place we've been to a couple times is the McDonald Williamson House in the East Hawkesbury area. We've been working with them. They're under construction right now. Otherwise, we were going to do a Halloween event out there. But we're looking back to getting out there in the months to come, probably sometime in the spring. And we're also working hard on a case with the Ottawa Little Theater. So we're looking forward to actually getting in and investigating that one, as well as Moore House in Carlton Place. We're looking to get back there.
Ooh, that sounds absolutely fantastic.
No, they're all great locations with lots of activity, and we've been to two of them, and we've had some interesting things happen while we were there, and we're looking forward to getting back for a second run.
Now, while I'm doing this, season three, please, nope. My computer is haunted. I swear my computer is haunted today.
It is the night for it.
It's like, I can't even. You know what? Forget it. I'm not even going to fight it anymore. It's... Let's just go to the transition screen. Ladies and gentlemen, this has been the Den of Lore in our Halloween special. And yeah. Tomorrow night... I was going to put Laird's picture up here, but the ghosts in the machine are not letting me do it. He will be joining us tomorrow to continue our discussion on, well, kind of the nature of the universe. Go back and listen to episode 42, and then tune into tomorrow night, because you're going to want to. It will be absolutely groundbreaking. We are going to be talking about his new book, Seeking the Primordial, and that will be one of the most mind-blowing 2 hours of talk radio that you'll probably ever hear anywhere. So, one more thing to our patrons. Again, apologies I did not get to you at the start of the show. Big thank you to our illustrious masters, Jackie from across the pond, Pat from Brooklyn, Kevin Fothy, Lee Veltman, Chuck Schultz, Antonio Martinez, Frederick Johnson, Jared Thompson, Mrs. Fox, Roses Wayne, Joshua E. Maddock, Ellen McCurdy, Matthew Toth, Mark Catalano, Michael Eckhoff, Dean John Kenward, Anthony Derry, Atlanta Kush, Venice from Magical Egypt, and Sentient. Please support independent broadcasting. Visit denoflore.com/Patreon if you like the content. And let's continue to see this grow. Ladies and gents, I am Chris George Zuger, and we are out once I can actually find where the heck. This is not fun.
Happy Halloween, everyone.
Happy Halloween.